Mr. Martinez?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, we agree with the Federal Circuit and with all the parties to this case that mere negligence is not enough to trigger enhanced damages. But the Federal Circuit is wrong to categorically bar such damages whenever an infringer presents an objectively reasonable defense at trial. That rule creates an arbitrary loophole that allows some of the most egregious infringers to escape enhanced damages.
Enhanced damages that we're discussing are really almost entirely punitive if the octane standard for attorney's fees remains in effect. In other words, the octane standard it gives the judge much more latitude to impose — to award attorney's fees when there's been unnecessary resistance. So all we're talking about is punitive damages.
I think
— And you want to basically dismantle the willfulness structure that the Court of Appeals has established. Is that correct?
No, I think that's not correct. I think the Federal Circuit, in our view, took the law in a good direction or a better direction when it reversed its underwater devices standard, which it said was akin to negligence, and it tried to tighten the law versus about willfulness up to make it harder to get enhanced damages. We think that was a step in the right direction, but we think that they made two important mistakes when they did that. The first one is essentially that they said that in a case where you have subjective intent, that in and of itself is not enough to establish a case for enhanced damages. Essentially, that you have to prove recklessness under an objective standard in each and every case. We don't think that's consistent with the history of the statute, with the purpose of the statute, with the way that punitive damages have always been considered, with the way willfulness has always been interpreted. So we think that's wrong. The second mistake we think that the Federal Circuit made is with respect to how the recklessness inquiry is supposed to happen. So recklessness, everyone agrees, is an objective inquiry. And in every other area of law where courts are conducting an objective inquiry, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to take a reasonable man and you put him in the actual person who is accused of wrongdoing in his shoes, and you take what that actual person knew and you figure out whether a reasonable man in that person's shoes would have thought that there was a very high risk that the conduct at issue was unlawful. And what the Federal Circuit does is not that. What they are essentially doing is taking the reasonable man and giving him the benefit of omniscience, giving him the benefit of hindsight, and saying, what facts do we know at the time of trial? And now that we know these facts at the time of trial, should we retroactively sort of undo —
I didn't think they were doing that. I thought what they were doing was saying we are not going to allow punitive damages in a case where the patent is so weak. And so we're really not looking at state of mind. And the reason that we're doing that is the reason I said previously. And the reason that we're not leaving it up to 475 trial judges is because those 475 trial judges don't see patent cases very much. And where they have a pretty good idea of how employment law, tort law, and all kinds of other law works, they don't have that a good idea in respect to patent law. And we, the Federal Circuit, do. That's why we are created. And we are afraid that if we do not use this objective standard, what we will see is a major effect, discouraging invention because of fear that if we try to invent, we'll get one of these letters and we can't afford $100,000 for an opinion. Now, I've just repeated the same argument, but we did create the government, that expert court, to make such determinations in the face of language that seems to allow it. And so what is wrong with their doing what they were paid to do?
I think there are a couple of things that are wrong with that, because I think the first thing that they're paid to do is to look to the text and history of the statute. Mm-hmm. And the text is, as you said, doesn't provide a categorical — is silent. So it doesn't provide the kind of categorical bar that the Federal Circuit is asking for. And the history of the statute affirmatively undermines that categorical bar, because the history makes clear that subjective bad intent, the wanton and malicious pirate that this Court talked about in the Seymour case, that is a sufficient basis to enhance damages. With respect to the recklessness standard, the fact that recklessness is objective, we all agree with that. But there's no reason to conduct the objective analysis in a different way in this context from the way that it's conducted in every other context. Mm. And imagine a police search.
Yeah, but I just gave you the reason. Now you can say — that you don't agree with that reason and give me a reason why it's wrong. But just to say it's no reason is disturbing.
Well, I think that the reason you gave is that I think a concern that we share, which is that we think it's important in cases where a patent is of questionable validity. We think it's important to encourage people in certain cases to challenge the patent or to make sure that innovation is not being stifled. And we think that the ordinary standard test for recklessness and our test accommodates that concern, because it would treat a reasonable good faith belief that a patent is invalid or that infringement is not occurring as a reason to conclude that enhanced damages are off the table.
As I read your brief and the petitioner's brief, I got the sense that there was quite a bit of difference between the two. The government seems to be taking a much higher standard before these punitive damages, or however you want to describe them, would be allowed. You use terms like egregious a lot. Your friend uses terms like, intentional, more than mere negligence. So is that perception? Do you think that perception is an accurate one?
I think there's some minor differences. Let me explain how I see our standard and maybe what the differences are. We think our standard covers three different buckets of cases. The first bucket, and this is borne out by the history, the first bucket are cases in which there's intentional conduct or bad faith conduct under a subjective standard, a subjective analysis. That's bucket number one.
And just a brief moment, by intentional you mean intentional infringement, not intentional
conduct. No, intentional conduct by a person who believes that he is infringing a valid patent. Okay. In other words, if you have a good faith belief that the patent is not valid and that belief's reasonable, we don't think you're an intentional infringer. Okay. The second bucket covers recklessness cases, and we all agree that recklessness is judged by an objective standard. Where we disagree with the other side is we think it's judged based on the facts and the circumstances that are known to the actual infringer at the time of infringement. And then the third bucket that we think is would qualify for enhanced damages are cases involving other types of egregious misconduct not having to do with the infringement itself. For example, if there's corporate espionage, if one of the parties destroyed evidence. I think the difference between us and petitioners is very minor. I think they would also allow enhanced damages for certain purely compensatory purposes, even when a case did not fall into the other three buckets. We can have a interesting historical discussion about whether or not that basis for damages is warranted or not. I don't think the court needs to resolve that in this case because it's not presented. But we do think our test is limited to those three buckets, essentially intentional conduct, reckless conduct, and other types of egregious litigation misconduct. We think that test is excuse me?
That avoids the use of the word willfulness.
Right. And I think we think there is
a bucket is there.
There is a sort of semantic element to this case. I think if you wanted to use that those three buckets to encompass willfulness, I think we wouldn't stand in the way of that. I think the problem that we see with what the respondents are trying to do is that they're looking to the history, the pre-1952 cases, and they're taking the word willful out of that. They're plucking that word out, and then they're defining it in a way that's at odds with the way in which willfulness or the way in which the standard was applied before 1952. We think if history is the justification for imposing a willfulness requirement in the first place, history has to provide the guide for interpreting what willfulness means or what the standard is. And I think that one of the ironies of the respondent's position is that they agree that this statute is, Section 284, is trying to get at culpable infringers. The touchstone is culpability. And they agree that recklessness is culpable enough to get you into enhanced damages world. And yet everyone in the civil law and the criminal law, intentional misconduct has always been considered worse than reckless conduct. And yet their test would allow a class of intentional infringers to essentially get out of jail free based on their ability to hire a lawyer and come up with a post hoc defense and present that defense.
Why isn't that post hoc defense necessarily, you're almost reading it as unreasonable by definition?
I think it's possible to imagine, let me make it concrete. Imagine a case in which there's intentional violation or a reckless violation based on the facts known at the time. And later, the person is sued, the infringer is sued, and he hires a law firm that scours the world. And they find the library in Germany that has a PhD dissertation that has some patents that arguably anticipated the invention at issue. So that's a new fact. It wasn't in anyone's head. No one was aware of it at the time the infringement occurred. And maybe that law firm then puts together a reasonable but wrong theory under which the patent is invalid in light of that prior art. We think that's a case in which the conduct was culpable at the time of infringement, and we think that's a case that would warrant enhanced damages.
Justice Kagan, did you have a question?
Can I ask, if you were doing this just on policy, very odd, but, you know, we have a text that everybody's off of at this point, and maybe some view that what happened in 1952, for some of the reasons that Justice Breyer gave, is perhaps not the most relevant thing. If you were doing it just on policy, would you come up with this same test?
Yes, we would, and the PTO would. We think that the policy concern that Congress had in mind of ensuring deterrence and punishment outweighs some of the considerations that have been raised by Justice Breyer and others. As long as we realize that as long as you have a good faith and reasonable defense, that will be a defense to liability, and as long as we realize that you need to have the kind of intentional or reckless conduct that, you know, it's a very high standard. If you need to have that kind of conduct in order to warrant enhanced damages.
Thank you, counsel.